don't need no education.
Welcome to Education Nation, where we tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Mark Durkin. School is now in session.
Well, good morning and welcome to Education Nation. I am your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, and I am here with my co-host, Mark Durkin.
Good morning again, Rebecca. Nice to see you.
Good morning to you, Mark. I'm so happy to join you again in the studio today. And we have a very exciting show planned today.
Absolutely.
In that we have a special guest coming up that we'll be introducing very soon.
Yes.
The Edina, Minnesota Public School District has traditionally carried the reputation as having some of Minnesota's finest schools when it comes to academic success. But over the last few years, the district's test scores began to noticeably drop, specifically in accordance with the state's reading and math standards.
That's right, Rebecca. I mean, take a listen to some of these numbers. In 2014, 86% of Edina high school students met the state reading standards, where today that's down to 79%.
That's a pretty significant drop.
It is. And the drop is even sharper when it comes to math, because in 2014, 79% of high school students were doing grade level work in terms of those math standards, whereas compared to today, it's only 66%.
Wow. Both so areas.
Big time drop.
Yeah.
And to put these numbers in perspective, the Minnesota Department of Education reports that Edina High School's ranking among the state's high schools fell from 5th to 29th in reading proficiency, and from 10th to 40th in math proficiency.
Wow.
So when it comes to the district as a whole, 30% of kids are not on track for success in these two class subjects.
And you know, for a district that has historically been known as one of the top districts in the Twin Cities, I would think that that would be ringing alarm bells off in everyone's minds, both the parents and the constituencies, as well as the staff and the leadership of the school.
Absolutely. And that even is more evident when you compare those numbers with how high school students are performing in other districts across the state. For example, at Wayzata High School, reading and math proficiency are currently at 85% and 77% respectively. At Orono High School, today's scores are at 85% and 73%. And at Eastview High School in the Rosemount, Apple Valley, and Egan School District, 82% of students are currently reading at grade level, and 83% are doing grade level math. So what's going on with the Edina Public School District?
Right.
Well, one thing's certain, the dramatic drop in test scores have come after the district adopted a complete change in educational philosophy. For years, the district has embraced an ideology of racial identity. So this particular focus, it stems from the wide gap that exists between the academic performance of white students and that of Black and Latino students. It must be noted, though, that the district's Asian students, on average, they're doing better than white students in both reading and math.
Yes, I think it'll be very interesting to talk to our guest about this more. I have one that has always believed that the issue is about the excellence in education and how we address that, not race lines. I don't think that that is the true bottom line. Well, the ideological emphasis really took off in 2012 when the district created a strategic planning and revision process to address this racial achievement gap. So what did this strategic planning create? What are some of the teaching lessons that have been implemented in the Edina classrooms? And how have Edina teachers and parents responded to these changes? Well, joining us over the phone this morning is Catherine Kirsten. Catherine is a writer and attorney, a senior policy fellow and founding director at the Center of the American Experiment, having also served as its chair from 1996 to 98. Catherine has also served as a Metro columnist for the Star Tribune from 2005 to 2008, and before that was an opinion columnist for the paper for 17 years. Catherine, thank you so much for joining us this morning on Education Nation.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Yes, and I remember reading a lot of your opinions way back. I've always admired you from a distance, so it's great to have you on the show. Yes. So let's dig right in, Catherine. The Edina School District's desire to close the achievement gap led to the creation of the All for All plan in 2013. Would you please explain for our listeners the plan's fundamental intentions?
Well, sure. The All for All plan was justified to people in Edina as a way to close the racial achievement gap at school. Mm-hmm. In fact, however, the way that the plan has unfolded makes it clear that there was very much an ideological agenda behind the plan, and that essentially is to move forward, really kind of K-12 with racial identity politics, specifically the idea that skin color and personal identity are inextricably linked. That's the opposite of what Dr. Martin Luther King wanted, of course. He wanted us to be judged in the content of our character. Right. But it's also the idea that white privilege is to blame for basically all the problems that racial minorities experience. Mm-hmm. And so part of the plan was a requirement that going forward, racially conscious teachers and administrators must be recruited and hired in the Edina schools. And it went on from there with that kind of requirement.
Hmm. Even down to the hiring, that's very interesting that they would actually pick and choose, that almost like a litmus test then, it sounds like they were using.
Very much, yes.
Oh, very interesting. Well, to achieve these goals, the All for All plan directed a shift in how all district employees approach their work. And what policies has the All for All plan put forth to ensure that not only teachers, but also students and parents are groomed to be agents of that social change that they are looking for?
Well, the first thing was that the plan required what it called, quote, a shift in how all district employees approach their work and how, quote, all teaching and learning experiences are viewed. Hmm. All of those things now have to be viewed through the lens of what they call racial equity. So that means lots of things. It means the kind of curricular programs that kids are exposed to. It means what they call comprehensive programs of extracurricular activities that are race-based, and outreach to parents that focuses on race. So there have been many talks with parents, public you know, conversations about, you know, how to talk to your children about race, about so-called microaggressions, you know, for parents of third graders and that kind of thing. So it's a comprehensive view through the lens of racial equity.
Right. And is this limited to just the whole idea of racial equity, or does it also involve the whole LGBTQ piece of the puzzle?
Well, it certainly involves that, because it's a kind of a vehicle for left-wing identity politics generally. There are a number of instances of LGBTQ issues and positions being kind of smuggled in under this umbrella.
I see.
Principal of one of the elementary schools, for example, sent around to all of her teachers a lesson. Let's see, what was this called? The essay was entitled, "Are You a Boy or a Girl? Helping Young Children Think Through Gender." And the author of this essay, which again was circulated to all the teachers at this school, described herself as, quote, "a white, cis, queer woman dedicated to collectively envisioning and implementing liberatory educational practices."
Oh, my goodness.
Kind of
what does that even mean?
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we're talking third graders.
Yeah, this is so sad. These poor kids, at the expense of learning their reading, writing, and arithmetic, right? I mean, this is really unfortunate, and that's why we see the results.
That's really sad. And in Edina, it appears that the reading and writing and math and critical thinking skills have become secondary in focus. So, you know, when it comes to this ideological quest of racial identity, you had mentioned earlier, Catherine, about the curricula programs that the students are being exposed to. I want to draw our attention to one specific program, specifically in the kindergarten through second grade Highlands Elementary School. This project is known as the Melanin Project. Would you explain for our listeners what this project is and what the project's objective is with these students?
Right. Well, this as done at Highlands Elementary School, this involved K through second graders. And the point really is to lead these young children to view themselves and their classmates through the lens of race, so in terms of skin color. So one thing they do is to trace their hands, and then they color them with their skin color, and they cut them out. And they put them, they're stuck on this poster for the class, and the poster says, "Stop thinking your skin color is better than anyone else's.
Wow.
Everyone is special." As if, you know, I've got a granddaughter who's that age. Her best friend is a very different color. She does not think that way.
Right.
But they're getting these kids to think in the very terms that they're condemning by this kind of behavior.
Right. It's the underlying assumption is that they would be thinking that they're
right.
better than another at that age.
Yeah.
And how ridiculous. I mean, kids are so colorblind at that age, and we want to encourage that, not discourage it.
Right. Well, this is one thing that, believe me, these educators are very much opposed to this common sense idea that you and I have that, you know, kids at the age of five are not thinking these terms. Why are they so opposed to that? Because they want to get to kids at the youngest possible age when they can influence them, you know, at a very vulnerable period of a young person's life when that child is completely incapable of, you know, logical thinking, but it's a sponge soaking up what he or she hears in the classroom. So the younger, the better for these folks. And they're doing this in the Edina schools with kindergartners.
My goodness. And the time that it takes to do these things, like I say, at the expense of actual learning.
Right. And it goes much deeper than just the Melanin Project. Katie Mahoney is the principal at Highlands Elementary, and she's a former teacher at the school, has been lauded for her credentials as being, you know, race conscious. In addition to this project, Mahoney uses the school's social media, in which she has an equity corner, as it's known, on the school's Wonder blog to promote a range of left-wing ideologies. Could you share with our listeners how the school's ABC book for kids is used to promote this propaganda?
Yes. Well, this is a book. Now, this book is not used at the school, but it is recommended by the principal to parents and kids on school through school media. And it's called A is for Activist. It's an ABC book, and it features texts like, A is for Activist. Are you an activist?
And this is for little kids?
C is for Creative Counter to Corporate Vultures. F is for Feminist. T is for Trans. X is for Malcolm X.
Are you kidding?
Right. Yes. So this is held up by the principal and recommended to parents as a book to use with their kids.
Oh.
Wow. I'm sorry, but
they're not
this
hiding
is
it. That's
just
for sure.
Shocking to me that this.
Well,
type
they
of
are.
A book,
they are actually. They are hiding it now. Why?
Right.
Because you exposed them, right, I suppose.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. So that is now no longer available to Edina residents general. You cannot go on the school website, I am told, and see this kind of thing anymore.
Well. Oh, okay. So there's a part of me that says, well, good. You know, Catherine, you did a great job of exposing them, and maybe they're starting to rethink some of these things. The worst thing, though, is if they go underground with it and continue to pursue this this whole agenda and just keep it more under the wire rather than exposed out in the open.
Right. And that's what I'm told by parents. They are, in fact, doing it.
They are.
All the same stuff going on. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, the school district has listed equity as a primary, you know, criteria on the district's evaluation for the K through five math curricula. So it's obvious that the equal treatment for all has nothing to do with learning that 9 times 5 is 45.
Right.
What's equally disturbing, though, is the political indoctrination in the high schools, U.S. literature and composition class, rather. So if you could tell us how 11th graders are being taught to use political thought in their understanding of literature.
Yes, well, we got this from the high school website. This is an 11th grade literature and composition class, and I understand that this is a required class, but one of the teachers' web pages said that by the end of the year, the students will have learned how to apply, quote, Marxist, feminist, post-colonial, and psychoanalytical lenses to literature.
Can you repeat that again? That is just, again, shocking.
It says, quote, by the end of the year, you will have learned, a couple ellipses in here, but you will have learned how to apply Marxist, feminist, post-colonial, and psychoanalytical lenses to literature.
Well, if that is not indoctrination, I don't know what is. And to be so blatant about it is just mind-boggling to me. And why are the parents not up in arms about this, Catherine, or are they?
Well, I think increasingly parents are up in arms. I've talked to quite a number of parents, and what they say is that they have gone to, well, they say a couple things. Sometimes they say, especially as the kids are getting older in high school, we didn't know. The extent, because our kids didn't tell us.
Sure.
But often they say, we went to the principal, we went to the teacher in the conferences and outside the conferences, and we said, we don't want this to go on. Why are you doing this? And they were told, as usual, you're the only parent who has a problem with this. Or they were, it was denied, oh, that was just a one-time deal, et cetera. So they're basically brushed off, and sometimes, you know, there's a veiled notion that they themselves are benighted racists.
Boy, you know, so divide and conquer almost is the school's philosophy, is we'll just keep them separated from each other, these parents who are complaining, so that they don't realize that there's enough here to be able to really complain about collectively.
Right.
And that is very frightening. And kids don't necessarily tell their parents, you know, and that's something I want parents to hear as they're listening to this show, that you really have to be proactive and ask your students what they're learning, what they're studying, especially when they get to these upper level. Well, and actually, as we're seeing, even in the lower school years, you need to be very proactive in asking your children what they're studying and what they're learning about at school these days.
That's great advice. Yes.
So in the Edina Public School District, the K-5 Cornelia Elementary School is one of the largest populations of elementary-aged minority and low-income students. In 2014, the school's principal, Lisa Masika, introduced a curriculum called Perspectives for a Diverse America, which is part of the Teaching Tolerance Anti-Bias Framework of the far-left Southern Poverty Law Center. But the principal didn't stop there. In the school's weekly agenda for teachers, she regularly shared something equity-related, quote-unquote, in which teachers recognized that equity, quote, equity was the only thing talked about, not the nuts and bolts of teaching, reading, and math, quote-unquote. Would you please share, Catherine, with our listeners, the different political resources this principal circulated that ultimately did not have an academic slant?
Yes, and I've seen some of these. So, for example, she sent these things around every week, pretty much, to the entire faculty. And one was a video of a black, quote, slam poet named Clint Smith. And he praises Black Lives Matter, and he denounces what, in his eyes, is police racism and brutality at great length. Another one of these is a woman, a poet called Jamila Lissacott, and she talks about microaggressions, cultural adaptation, and equity as a tri-tongued poet. And I think that means that she's like an immigrant from Jamaica or something, and she speaks Ebonics, and she speaks, you know, regular white English. And so, you know, what does this have to do with teaching second graders how to
read.
Right.
This is for an elementary school. I want to remind our listeners that what you just described is something that seems so far off from what an elementary student would need to hear. I'm trying to figure out how this has anything to do with teaching lower school students. So clearly, again, this is material that was been given to the teachers themselves. So they were training the teachers in this type of thought is really what was happening. My goodness.
Yes.
Well, just last year, in an effort to make classroom instruction more equitable, Principal Masika, again, the same woman that we were just speaking about, changed the way reading and math instruction is delivered at her school as well. The All for All plan states that equity will be achieved when academic performance is no longer predictable by race and income. Well, that seems like a good goal. But how you get there, it seems that we have very differing views on. Please share with us the instructional changes the principal thought would bring that equity and how these changes have made it even more difficult for struggling students to get the focused help they need.
Right. Well, this is not just Lisa Masika's idea. I've seen that this has strong supporters at the federal level, for example. Hmm. It's the idea that remedial classes, honors classes, every class should have exactly the proportion of kids of various skin colors as there are kids in those groups in the school. And if that's not the case, then you got bias. Hmm.
Getting back to what you said earlier about Dr. Martin Luther King, it was about ability, about character, and we need to get these kids all up to the same ability. We can't arbitrarily pretend that everybody has the skill set to be in honors classes.
Exactly.
How artificial is that? That's
the problem. So what she did was to try to make in this perfect range of skin colors in the remedial groups, the groups that were getting special help, and this is particularly important for kids who are recent immigrants and don't speak English very well.
Yeah.
She thought, that there were too many kids of that color in some of these classes getting special help. This is just an hour a week.
But
it was intense focus, really honing in on the skills the kids needed. And so she moved these kids. She made it much more difficult for them to get this special help. I'm sure, this was kind of an unintended consequence of her ideological move here. But you just see the scores of these kids plummet. The scores of Black and Hispanic students of two or more races in 1 year dropped from 58% proficiency to 34%
in reading.
I've had dyslexic kids myself, and I know what happens if kids can't read well by third grade. The farther behind you get, the harder your life is going to be. And that's what's happening to these kids as a result of that.
It just seems like this, it's just like there's hyper focus on race when there's so many other factors. Like you say, recent immigrants who don't know the language, of course they're going to need more specialized help in getting caught up in the school system. And if they have a preponderance of darker skin colors because they're coming from other countries that have that, well, that has nothing to do with their race. It has to do with the fact that they're coming from non-English speaking countries.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. I just don't understand. It seems so obvious. It's hard to believe that anybody would think that this is a good idea.
Right. Well, what's obvious here, the changes are backfiring. And I'd like if Catherine would explain Cornelia's reading and math test scores on the Minnesota's MCA3 tests from 2015 and through 17. If we could touch on those specific scores. And when questioned about those changes, what was the school district's response?
Oh, well, that's interesting. Well, I just recited a couple of these figures from those tests. Overall, the reading proficiency in those years for the entire school in all grades fell from 78 to 70%, but it was the minority kids. And when I say minority here, I basically mean Black and Hispanic or kids of two or more races, because as you pointed out, Asian kids on average do better than white kids in the Edina schools. But if you look at, let's see, the ability of minority students as a group to do math at grade level. That declined from 71% in 2015 to 64%.
Wow.
But with these Hispanic students, now these black and Hispanic students, it dropped from 51.5% to 38%. So we can go on and on with these numbers, but you know, it's very troubling, as you say.
Well, it's not doing these kids it's doing them such a disservice to pretend that they don't need the help when they actually do need the help. I mean, I just can't imagine. This is their chance, their only chance at an education, and then we're taking away the very tools that would give them the opportunity to get ahead.
Right, exactly.
Well, in addition to those lower scores on the reading and math tests, I mean, ordinary students they're often falling through the cracks, and gifted education is languishing. And to make matters worse, parents and students with dissenting perspectives are feeling an overwhelming emotional toll. So what are some of the very real fears that some of these dissenting parents and students are facing every day against those who implement this type of indoctrination?
Well, you know, this is so you could talk for 24 hours about this. On average, the parents say that their kids are afraid to speak up with any kind of dissenting point of view. They are fearful of being bullied, being harassed, being mocked. I was just talking, in fact, to a parent today who was saying that his son came back home every day after this 10th grade English class. That's really one of the worst in the whole high school. And every day he would say things like, you know, I feel terrible about being born a white male.
Mm-hmm.
And they would say, just, you know, buck up, try to get through it. You've only got a few more years left. But this takes just a tremendous toll on kids. And, and there are kids who say that it's just become automatic that they write what they don't believe in their high school papers because they know the teacher is going to demand that, and their friends will even blame them if they get a low grade or if they're publicly humiliated in front of their classmates during question and answer because their classmates say, hey, you should have known. Mm. You know, you just don't cross her. I mean, what kind of lesson is that? Pleasing the authorities is what you have to do. What kind of lesson is that for people in democratic America?
Exactly. And whatever happened to rigorous debate and dialogue and discussion and teaching kids how to think for themselves rather than telling them what to think?
Right. And that's been replaced by this anti-bullying law in the state, but it only seems to apply to one group of people.
Right.
Oh, how true is that?
Oh, man. Yeah, that's a really good point.
And you know, Catherine, we have to let our listeners know that she shared an article with us earlier during the day here about the turmoil at Edina High School that has really continued and come to the surface based on some Veterans Day assembly actions. And we're going to talk about those extensively with Catherine in studio on Saturday, December 2nd, so you're not going to want to miss that.
Yeah, you're going to definitely want to make sure that you're part of that. Well, we only have 1 minute left, Catherine. Could you very quickly give our listeners some advice and encouragement about how to kind of respond to this and how to kind of seek direction for their own students?
Sure. Well, there are a couple things I would say. First of all, it can be very difficult to fight a school system that's so overwhelmingly biased as Edina schools. I would give thought to charter schools, to private schools, to simply removing this headache from your life. But that aside, I think, Rebecca, your idea that parents need to monitor what their kids are reading in school. They need to talk at the dinner table about what your social studies teacher said about X, Y, Z. Try to counter that. Try to bring your kids together with friends from like-minded families where you can support each other. And then speak up. Just object.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the school's rules, because there are rules against all of these things in the Edina district. They are simply being ignored.
Mm. Oh, excellent advice, Catherine. We are out of time, and I am just so thankful that we were able to have you on the show today.
Thank you, Catherine.
And we look forward to, again, December 2nd, having Catherine Kirsten back on the show to continue where we left off today. So thanks for joining us today on Education Nation.